It's Thursday, May 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, Republicans and Democrats essentially now have their candidates for president. Financial markets begin to react to the U.S. presidential race. Economics hits a U.S. territory especially hard.
Kenny was one of the artists. He wrote for under that name.
A recently departed pop star we now discover wrote songs for a country music icon. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump is now the presumptive Republican nominee for the U.S. presidency. But early indications are he faces a daunting contest against the likely Democratic candidate, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Mr. Trump says the general election campaign has officially begun, as VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone joins us to discuss the latest.
It does indeed, and we can already see Hillary Clinton, the presumed Democratic nominee, and Donald Trump, who now has a glide path to the nomination, both eyeing each other warily, both making comments already. I mean, Hillary Clinton was on interviews on Wednesday talking about Trump's tactics, his bullying and his insulting tendencies. So, yes, we're kind of moving to the next phase here. I would say, though, that for both parties, for both front runners or would-be nominees, there's still some business to take care of at home, that is, in their own parties. Trump has to win over the rest of the Republican establishment. That won't happen overnight. Hillary Clinton still has a challenger out there who's winning primaries against her. And that's probably going to go on for a while yet. So even though Bernie Sanders doesn't really have a mathematical path to the nomination, he's kind of dragging her back into this Democratic fight. It's something that Clinton would like to put behind her and focus on the general election.
How hard is that for Hillary to kind of ignore, if you will? I mean, Bernie is making a lot of noise.
Yeah, she's trying to, but here's the, you know, there's some risks there because Clinton will need his supporters. So however she deals with this in the end, it's crucial because they have to find a way to bind up their differences. And she really does need his supporters. The real spirit on that Bernie Sanders campaign is evident at all the rallies. And somehow they're going to need to transfer some of that support to Hillary Clinton, especially among young voters. Independents that he's drawn in a number of state primaries that allow independents to vote. So Sanders has some key sectors of the electorate that she needs to appeal to, and she can't do that if they have a kind of split that isn't bound up.
Trump, of course, is making the noise among the Republicans, and I guess a lot of this now comes down to behind the scenes for the Republican Party.
We're seeing this come slowly. There are a trickle of congressional endorsements coming down for Donald Trump. Trump said at his victory speech he's getting calls from people who want to join the Trump train. But look, there's been some damage done here. The Republican establishment never took to him from the beginning. They always were trying to find ways to beat him. One alternative after another, you know, went down at Trump's sword, so to speak. So now they're faced with the prospect of either sort of sitting the election out or getting behind him. I think over time, more and more Republicans will, you know, get behind him. They will do that to unify because of the prospect to them of a Hillary Clinton presidency.
We have alluded to this topic before. How are these two candidates going to go about the process of selecting a running mate?
Yeah, and this is a crucial first decision, really, for both of them as apparent nominees. Certainly Trump is closer to that point now. He's already talked about maybe he should vet or check out John Kasich, who's also with Ted Cruz, you know, departing the race. As a possible running mate, and Kasich would bring some strengths. But some of the people that are going to be mentioned on the Republican side, you have to wonder if they would ever agree to run with Donald Trump based on some of the things they've said. That being said, in politics, it can lead to some strange partnerships. We've seen it over the decades, really.
Well, our best political alliance is with VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, thank you for providing insight for us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Numerous national election surveys show Clinton, who is seeking to become the country's first female president, defeating Trump by about 6 percentage points. For our social media segment, International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me here in the studio. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, it's yet another day of Donald Trump making the headlines.
Yes,
What's the buzz online?
The buzz today is from Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. She is not a stranger to criticizing Trump, as you know, but this time she really stepped up her game. She said Trump had built his campaign on racism, sexism, and xenophobia.
Well, how influential is her message on social media?
Very influential. She has more than 2 million followers on Facebook and almost a million followers when you combine her two verified accounts on Twitter. And the handles are at Elizabeth4MA and at S-E-N Warren. Her latest statement on Trump is on her Facebook page, but it's more than 200 words long. So to just give you the gist of it, she argued he incites violence among his supporters and attacks veterans like John McCain. She ended the statement with, "I am going to fight my heart out to make sure Donald Trump's toxic stew of hatred and insecurity never reaches the White House."
Good synopsis. It's the Cliff Notes version. If you don't know what that is, look it up. What's the public's reaction like to that post?
Well, when I sorted the comments by popularity, the top 10 replies were urging her to endorse Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders as a Democratic nominee. And the senators have shown support for similar causes, especially when it comes to finance and economy. Now, Sanders supporters left comments highlighting how 91% of Republicans and 62% of independent voters feel negatively toward his rival, Hillary Clinton. That's based on polling by Wall Street Journal and NBC. They're also commenting that if she were to fight her heart out to make sure Trump doesn't win the race, she should stand with Sanders.
All right. Well, what else is trending?
French fashion house Chanel says it's scheduled to hold runway show in Cuba's capital, Havana. Last year's Chanel Cruise collection was showcased in Seoul, South Korea, so that might be a little bit of interesting difference between last year to this year's. Jim, back to you. Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you. And Chanel number 5 on the 5th of May. That's very appropriate. Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You can tweet your questions and comments to at @VOA_IE. That's our program's Twitter account. You may also tag me if you like, as well as G on those tweets. We're at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. This is VOA. Here are some of the top stories that are trending now in Asia. Myanmar wants the United States to stop referring to Rohingya. Philippine dictator's son maintains appeal ahead of national polls. India rebuts U.S. charges of deteriorating religious freedom. China's Communist Party disciplines outspoken property tycoon. In China, traditional banks fight challenge from internet firms. You can find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. U.S. financial markets remain volatile for a number of reasons, and now you can add the presumptive U.S. presidential candidates to that mix. VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino joins us from New York. And Jill, let's begin with trends today. The energy sector seems to be weighing on the markets again.
Well, you know what? The energy sector has had a tremendous run from the February 11th lows. I mean, just look at what crude oil has done, going from about the $26 level to well over $45. And at the end of the day, fundamentals really haven't changed. We're still in a big oversupply glut. With the exception of the United States, we have not seen any production cuts out of OPEC or non-OPEC countries. So the fundamentals haven't changed. It's had quite a run. Seeing the energy names come in a bit is not a surprise. You also have Apple going in a 9-day losing streak. And it's time for the markets to have a little bit of corrective action. Like we've said time and time again, this allows investors to put some fresh money into the market that might have missed that 14% run from those February 11th lows.
Well, with all the volatility going on, I'm sure investors are wondering what would happen should Donald Trump reach the White House. He's one step closer now.
He is one step closer. And with John Kasich pulling out today as well, it could be a big reality, going from reality TV to Trump as our new reality. So he essentially has the Republican nomination locked in. And we saw a sell-off in S&P 500 futures because there's widespread confusion about exactly how Trump would change policy. And if there's one thing markets hate, it's uncertainty. And uncertainty lends to the type of volatility that we saw earlier in the year. I would expect this volatility to go through the election and probably through it. But if you have to look at stocks and who's going to be a winner, who's going to be a loser, I broke down some of the sectors. And one of the obvious sectors is defensive names like a Lockheed Martin, like a Northrop Grumman, because Trump has made it very clear he's going to increase defense spending. A sector that's out of favor would be healthcare. And we've seen that sell off over the past week or two because he wants to do away with Obamacare. That's going to inject a lot of uncertainty into that sector because it changes everything up. Another interesting group I would take a look at are consumer discretionary names like restaurants, cars, clothing and apparel, because he wants to revamp the tax system, which would put more money into consumer pockets. So I think the two best performing sectors would be defense and consumer spending. If you have assets in healthcare, you might want to dial that back a bit and take some profits, because if he makes it into the White House, that's going to be one of the first things to see that volatility.
Well, investors used to be hanging on each and every word from the Fed chief, moving markets with just a few sentences. Now we're going to have to be watching what the candidates say out on the trail.
You're absolutely right there, because I'd be very surprised, and most analysts and traders I speak with would be shocked to see Chair Janet Yellen make a move on interest rates going into an election, especially in June. We now have the Brexit situation to contend with the UK possibly pulling out of the European Union. So there's a lot of volatility events going into the summer. And I think to rock that boat before the election, that would take a lot of guts for the Federal Reserve to do. So we'll see. There's going to be some good trading around this, over multiple momentum plays that you can have in this. But for longer term retail investors like you and I, stay the course. Just keep putting money away, because it's long term averages is what we care about.
So many factors involved, but we're going to keep tabs on all of it with Jill Malandrino from New York. Jill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And be sure to follow Jill on Twitter at Options Profits. While concerns about the U.S. economy remain in front of voters, another crisis is taking place in a U.S. territory, Puerto Rico, where the island's Government Development Bank announced a debt restructuring deal just hours after saying it would skip a $422 million payment that was due on Monday. International Business Times reporter Maria Gallucci joins us to explain.
Puerto Rico right now is struggling with how to pay $72 billion worth of debt. And it's kind of coming to a crisis point this summer, because it's coming up on some critical debt payments. It already defaulted on about $422 million worth of its debt on Monday, and it's probably going to default on about $2 billion worth of additional debt in July. And so this crisis really has legislators both in the U.S. Congress and Puerto Rico scrambling to find some sort of solution, to reach some sort of deal with creditors that might give Puerto Rico some more breathing room.
Puerto Rico, for our listeners, is a U.S. territory, of course, not a state. And so how does that relate as far as the United States and Congress in making these payments?
Puerto Rico's territory position, it makes it really unique versus another state. For example, 50 U.S. states can file for bankruptcy protection under Chapter 9 of the Bankruptcy Code. That kind of allows them to restructure their debt and find ways to kind of both keep the lights on for residents and satisfy their creditors. Puerto Rico doesn't have that ability. Congress in the 80s voted to exclude Puerto Rico from Chapter 9, and that sort of has left the responsibility up to Congress rather than up to Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico has been struggling with a recession, and that has kind of helped to play into this economic crisis there.
Absolutely. So Puerto Rico has been in a recession for about a decade now. A lot of that is due to the fact that manufacturers left, big pharmaceutical companies left the island after a really lucrative tax incentive ended. And hundreds of thousands of residents, actually, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, and hundreds of thousands of them have moved to the mainland seeking jobs. The territory's tax base has really shrunk in recent years. At the same time, the government didn't do a great job of managing the budget or kind of doing some long-term fiscal planning and really started borrowing heavily. The government development bank started issuing a lot of bonds to kind of help cover some of those costs. And as a result, it kind of spiraled out of control. So suddenly it has $72 billion debt now that it doesn't really know how to pay back.
Now, amid the dark clouds of the debt crisis, there is a bit of a silver lining as some residents are trying to improve life on the island, correct?
Sure. Well, actually, I wrote, in addition to the story that I wrote on Puerto Rico's debt crisis, I wrote a piece about entrepreneurs on the island. And it was really interesting because despite the fact that, you know, you have this recession, you have this debt crisis, there's a lot of anxiety in Puerto Rico. There's still this group of entrepreneurs, you know, self-starters and business creators who are basically vowing to sort of fight through it. And they see themselves as sort of the future for Puerto Rico, and they want to be on the island creating jobs and creating new wealth, even though the economy is going in the opposite direction. So I found that really inspiring.
I would imagine their goal is to create jobs and perhaps lure people back to Puerto Rico, if not at least stem the tide of people flowing out.
Yes, it's exactly that. And you actually have seen some Puerto Ricans are moving back to the island. It's not enough to offset the number who are leaving. But I spoke with a doctor who moved back to work at a research hospital there. And so there are folks who very much, if you know, if they can afford to do so and they have opportunities on the island, are coming back because the population went from about 4 million a few years ago to 3.5 million. Last year. So it's really a dramatic change that's happening in Puerto Rico. Many of them want to make sure that their culture and their heritage lasts.
Maria Gallucci, International Business Times energy and environment reporter. And you can read more about her Puerto Rico debt crisis article online. Maria, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And be sure to visit the VOAnews.com website for more on this story. Also, follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. And while you're on Facebook, like us at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. The late performer Prince was primarily known for his rock and soul and funk-infused grooves, but did you know that Prince also dabbled in country music? Yep. Nikki Strong of VOA Music joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to give us another glimpse into the rich legacy of his royal purple badness.
Well, so Nikki, does Prince have a country album hidden in his secret vault of unreleased music?
I think he probably does. He probably does. For right now, he can't say for sure because it's still locked up. But one thing we do know is that Prince could excel in any genre he put his mind to and frequently did. And during his entire life, he dabbled in other genres under different pseudonames. One of those names is Joey Coco.
So he wrote for Kenny Rogers under that name, didn't he?
Yes, exactly. So Kenny was one of the artist he wrote for under that name. He wrote the song You're My Love that Kenny recorded for his 1986 album They Don't Make Them Like They Used To. And he also wrote Telepathy for country artist Deborah Allen.
So how did he and Kenny Rogers get together?
Okay, well, Kenny Rogers had been a big fan of Prince, like the rest of the world. And in the 80s, Kenny said he con- contacted Prince through a mutual friend and asked if he would write him a song. And Prince actually did. And on his Facebook page, Kenny Rogers says that when he sent the song to me, if I remember right, it was him playing all of the instruments on it and he had his background vocals on it. He said, unfortunately, on the finished record, somehow my producer didn't end up using the music or vocals. The song was recut. He then goes on to say, it was such an incredible thing that Prince took the time to do that for me. He was a brilliant guy and a gifted musician with a lot of feelings. And you could tell his feelings went far deeper than what was written on his face.
That's You're My Love by Kenny Rogers, written by Joey Coco, also known as Prince.
Yes, that is the song. And I will be playing that track in full this week on Country Hits USA in tribute.
Oh, great. Well, you can hear Country Hits USA on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook at VOA Music or Twitter at VOA underscore music. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
You want to know if I care for you? You ought to know.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can always find us at our website. That's voanews.com, any time of the day or night. Also like us on Facebook at VOA Now. And we're all over Twitter at VOA underscore IE is the handle you want to follow. We thank so much our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. Most of all, you for joining us. Come back when you can. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the spring of 1943, German troops and police entered the Jewish ghetto in Warsaw, Poland, intent on deporting its inhabitants to concentration camps. While the residents rose up and fought back for nearly a month, ultimately the uprising was broken. Even though few of the ghetto's inhabitants survived the Second World War, the Warsaw Uprising became a symbol of resistance to the Nazi killing machine. The date was April 19th, which corresponds to the 27th day of Nisan on the Hebrew calendar, and this year falls on May 5th. Today, this day is observed as Yom HaShoah, or Day of Remembrance of the Victims of the Holocaust. The Holocaust was one of humanity's darkest moments. 6 million Jews were murdered by the Nazi regime and its collaborators solely because they were Jewish. It started in the 1930s when the Nazi Party came to power and the German government began to target those it deemed to be inherently inferior, mostly Jews, but also Roma, the disabled, homosexuals, and Slavs. They also targeted communists, socialists, Freemasons, and Jehovah's Witnesses. The victims, mostly civilians, were rounded up, shut into ghettos, and deported to dozens of concentration or slave labor camps. Some were shot and dumped into mass graves. By 1941, a number of camps existed specifically for mass killing. Those sent to slave labor camps were slowly starved and worked to death. In the aftermath of the Second World War, the international community resolved never again to allow such atrocities to occur. In 1948, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. The legacy of Holocaust victims enriches our understanding and is a symbol of the meaning of human dignity. In America, survivors remind us of the importance of tolerance by speaking in classrooms and community institutions across the country. They serve as living history, sharing their stories and recounting the experiences of all who perished. Poet Claire Guest writes, "We couldn't stop the horror. We couldn't stop the hate. We can't change this history. We are here too late. But what we can do is remember in our thoughts and in our ways. Let these memories guide our actions."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.